You know, all I want to do is to be a librarian, and all I want to do is to introduce that child to that book.
Sue, I want to thank you for taking this time this morning to be here with me.
Oh, thank you.
Right, in your beautiful library.
I know, isn't it wonderful?
This is really, really nice.
It's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah. You've been with us for how long now?
About 6 months.
Six months?
Since August, so yeah, right. And counting.
Where were you before you came here?
Canadian International School.
In Kobe?
No.
In Kobe. Not that one. You know what I'm talking about. Isn't that in Kobe?
I do know that one. Yeah.
Okay.
Canadian International School, Tokyo.
They have one in Tokyo?
It's a different school to the one in Kobe.
It's not even related?
Not even related.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's it located?
So Canadian International School, Tokyo is Nakameguro and also Osaki. There's three campuses, actually.
Okay, how many kids would you think in total?
Around 500, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long have they been established? Because I haven't heard a thing about them.
They are actually paired with Prince Edward Island in Canada, in Nova Scotia.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Where were you born?
I was born in a town called Toowoomba in Queensland, in Australia.
Okay. Did you stay there most of your life? I mean,
From my childhood. Yeah, I was raised in Australia, and I had a pretty big family, a step family. So my father had been divorced, and my mother was widowed at a pretty young age. So I had three brothers and three sisters, and they bought a very big old house. For something like $7,000, I think, at the time. It's crazy, like house prices.
Now, you came with the father, with your father or with your mother?
No, I'm both of there.
You can show me.
Yeah. I actually have a picture of my, this is my family, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm the baby.
You're the baby? Oh.
Right.
So you have older siblings. So you have five older siblings.
Right. Six, actually. This was just one that's
one wasn't
not
in the picture in that day.
Yeah.
And that's you, the baby.
That's me. That's right.
Look at this. And your mother, you were telling me about her the other day when I was in here, that she was over some case in Australia.
So my mother was, this later in her life, she went back to university and became a psychologist. Mm-hmm. And so she was always an advocate for her clients. Mm-hmm. My dad also was a great mentor of mine because he was a teacher, and he was, I guess you would say these days, special needs teacher. He was a remedial teacher. Mm-hmm. And so he was an advocate for kids who were having trouble in certain ways. And I think that's really informed how I've become a person, how I grew into adulthood.
Are they still with us? Are both of them still with us?
No, my father passed away, unfortunately, a few weeks before my first daughter was born.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that was a hard time.
I can imagine. How long ago was that?
She's 25 now, so.
So it's a long time.
Yeah, right. And she just got married last year.
Is that right?
Did
you marry in Japan?
No, I was living in Japan ever since I was, 18, really. And I met my husband when I was 18. Then I went back to Australia to finish university. Then I came back. I got married when I was 25, and I was living in Japan, but we actually got married in Australia.
Your husband, I'm taking it, is Japanese.
He's Japanese,
okay.
Right.
So tell me, what was it like as a little girl? You're the only child between your mother and father.
Right.
Okay. But your siblings were with you. They're a lot older than you, so I mean.
Right.
So how long?
So not everyone lived at home. Right. The person that I lived the longest with, I guess, was Hugh. And according to my mum, we fought like Kilkenny cats.
He's so much older than you, though.
He's 11 years older than me.
So I don't know how you fought.
But he's the closest. He was almost the closest in age.
Right.
I spent a lot of time as a child visiting my various brothers and sisters. My sister in Melbourne. She was in Brisbane for a while, and then she was in Sydney. Mm-hmm. Hugh was in Sydney. This one, Andrew, he was in the outback of Australia for a while.
Okay.
And so one thing that my husband was able to do when we met, he was very young and I was very young. He was able to go on a kind of a homestay trip around Australia and stay with most of my brothers and sisters.
By himself?
By himself, yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, while
that
I stayed in Japan.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's so that was a nice...
You already had your daughter.
That was a nice thing. No. This is when we were both...
Oh, like, you were just dating?
We were just children.
Oh, just children.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah, we were just... he was, I guess, he was 23. He's a little older than me.
So yeah. I'm going to guess, when you were growing up, you were more academic than you were more sports-minded, or were you both? I'm thinking about elementary, junior high school.
Yeah, I guess more academic. My dad was the greatest mentor for me.
Is that right?
He grew up in Africa, actually. His story is interesting. His parents were missionaries, and they used to read a lot of things like Beatrix Potter and things like that. So he, in turn, would read to me. And there were certain books that I still know off by heart just because they were read to me so often. We have the books in the library too, so it's really fun sometimes to recite one of the books to a child and have them say, "Oh, how do you know? How do you know it? How do you know what the words say?"
Right?
Yeah, of course. Because it was read to me so often.
So your father and mother, how many kids came with your father? How many kids came with your mother?
Three.
Oh, right, because like you said, there were six. You have six siblings.
And
then they had you. So they could take all their lessons from the three they had each and do their best with you. You see what
Maybe.
I'm saying? Really, that's what
sure.
it was. Really, because, you know, when you have your first child,
right.
even if you have one,
right.
you put every, you're learning.
Right.
It's the first time you've ever had a child.
Sure. He was a high school teacher and of a boys' high school. But sometimes he would take me along on their school camps. So
you'd be the only girl among all these boys.
Well, I would be staying with the teachers.
I understand.
Yeah, and then, you know, I was much younger. I was just staying in the teacher's house and all the boys were in a tent or whatever. He did a marine biology camp to a place called Hastings Point. A couple of times I went along on that camp. And during the summer holidays, I remember he got our family together, including my aunt, who is she's an actor.
His sister or your mother's sister?
His sister.
Okay.
Yeah. She's an actor in the United States, actually. She's been on Broadway many times.
Oh, let's see her name.
Oh, her name is Patricia Connolly.
Patricia Connolly?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway.
What type of actress is she?
She's a dramatic actress, but also comedic. Yeah, she's on stage. She's
what were
a
her
stage
years?
Actor.
What were her years?
I don't know. What's the year now? I mean, she's
still doing it.
Well, she's not in something currently, but I believe she was in something last year, and she was born in 1933. So.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, she would visit us in Australia with her daughter Emily, who lived with us for a while, and.
Was Emily your age?
Emily was my age.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's still in the United States. Her dad is American. And we would make audiobooks together. So we would, he would have a little tape recorder, which he bought me for one of my birthdays, and he like pushed the play button and the record button at the same time. We would be in the library of this Toowoomba Grammar School, which was the, you know, the boys' school that he worked at. It was very quiet because it's during the summer. I also learned to swim in the Toowoomba Grammar School pool. So, you know.
Your father taught you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of time with you. That's beautiful.
Right. And my mum, too. I mean, they were both very dedicated parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I
well,
really owe
them so
much.
Didn't your siblings get jealous? Didn't they get jealous every now and then? Especially the one you were fighting with the most.
<That's> well, I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
That's probably why you're fighting so much.
Maybe.
You're saying you're treated so nice and all this stuff. We
Maybe.
Have.
Maybe
yeah.
I was a brat. Who knows?
Yeah. Did you get away with anything? Do you ever remember your parents being really strict with you?
Oh, yeah. They were
disciplinarians. They would let you know when you got out of line.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, my siblings weren't living with me most of the time. I mean, I really don't remember so much even living with you.
So what were some of the things that you really focused on? You like to read, but when you started to take it up on your own, what kind of books would you read?
Oh, that's a great question. So I can't remember any special, well, apart from the ones that I can recite. I can recite many picture books. But when I started to read by myself, I remember a couple of books that I was very obsessed with and read over and over. One was called Marsha by, her name was Mary Kay. I'm not sure. It's very difficult to find copies of that book now because it's out of print. My mother has my copy still, in her home in Australia, and I also remember in grade 9 I read Thomas Hardy, Tess of the D'Urbervilles, which was a very special book to me, mainly because it was a massive, great, big, thick book meant for adults, and I just read it from beginning to end, like lying in the backyard in the sun or in the shade. I just kept going until it was finished, and so I felt a great sense of pride for having finished such an amazingly thick book, while everybody else in the class had just finished, you know, Adrienne Moll, age 13 and 3/4, I had like finished this Thomas Hardy novel. So I wasn't like other kids where I would like get a series of books and read all of the books in the series, although I do think I read The Famous Five and The Secret Seven and things like that, but I didn't ever really become invested in anything if I didn't want to. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yes.
And I really think that that's the way kids are. They will get invested in what they want to. And so you just have to find that thing.
So what kind of stories do you like? Mysteries or?
I do like historical fiction. I don't mind mysteries. I have read a lot of Agatha Christie's actually when I was young. Right.
Yeah.
I like books that are a little bit magical. Well, magical realism, I guess that's a genre, but I like things to be a little bit mysterious. There's a book called Echo by Pam Munoz-Ryan, which I'm very fond of. It's very, it's got a very slight magical element that is more like destiny that runs all the way through it. So I like Holes by Louis Sacker, which is, it isn't magical in that it's a very realistically written book, but there is just something about it that, you know, everything comes around in full circle. That's very satisfying to me as a reader.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you decide to become a librarian?
So, my kids started off in Japanese school.
You have two?
I have two, yeah. Sachina and Amy, yeah.
All right. And their ages now are what?
They're very close in age. So, Sachina's 25 and Amy's 24 now. So.
Okay.
They're
just two girls. Okay.
Yeah, they were often mistaken for twins, but not. They don't. I mean, I don't think that they look alike, but you know, they have the same.
So close nature.
They look like sisters. Okay, yeah, right. So they were going to Japanese school, and then my husband and I just suddenly thought maybe we should switch things up a bit and have them go to an international school, because it seemed to us that the more that they were in Japanese school, they were only going to ever be Japanese. And I was taking them to Australia every year, but we didn't feel like that was fully recognizing who they were and who they could be. So
did you speak to them in Japanese or in English?
No, I spoke to them in English, so it was fine.
So always?
Always, I spoke to them.
And your husband only spoke to them in Japanese?
In only Japanese, yeah, right. There was this one year where I wanted to take them to Australia, but also Sachina, the older one, was in the school band. This was in grade 3. She was in grade 3, so she was playing the clarinet. My mother bought her first clarinet, and that's another amazing story. But anyway, she was playing the clarinet in the school band, and I wanted to make sure that she could be in the school band because we go to Australia every year. So I went to the school and I said, would that be okay? And they said, well, actually, no, you have to go to the practices every day in the summer holidays. So, you know, we can't really let her be in the band if that's going to be the case. And I was a little bit heartbroken, and I had a bit of a fight with the principal or the vice principal. And I said, well, maybe I'll just take them to Nagoya International School. And he said, yes, that sounds like a very good idea. And I was like, oh, just hang on there, buddy, because, you know, you don't know what you just said to me. That was just, I felt like he crossed a line. He was a man who's meant to be an advocate for Gimu Kyoiku, right? He's supposed to educate my children, but he's saying, no, take them to international school where they belong, those little gaijin, you know. I was very mad. And at the time that I was very mad, I walked into a convenience store and saw the headmaster of Nagoya International School. And I said to him, oh, yes, we're thinking of taking our children to Nagoya International School. And he said, oh, you should come and have a school tour. And I was like, oh, of course, we can't afford it. And he said, but we have scholarships. And I was like, okay. And somehow we just suddenly made the decision to send them to NIS. And
from the third grade?
She was already in fourth grade, and then her sister was in third grade when they started. So that was pretty intense. And in order to make that work financially, we had to take a loan out the first year, but then the second year I just needed to work. I really needed to work to be able to make that tuition because, you know, the scholarship wasn't that great. So I had to make sure that I could keep that going. It was all very well for us to make that very rash decision, but then we had to follow through.
You didn't follow through, right.
So I immediately started on my master's in TESOL, teaching English to speakers of other languages. Through
did you do this online?
Online.
That's what I thought.
So most of the time I would be sat in the library, the beautiful, beautiful library of Nagoya International School, and I would just be like, you know. Okay. And also at the same time I was volunteering in their library.
Okay.
I was mainly just taking every book off the shelf and putting a price for every book so that they could audit, you know, the financial people could audit the number of books. And, you know, some of the books were very, very old, and you know, I just had to put like 500 yen or something. We had to make up a price, but we had to have a price for every book. And I was part of, you know, just inputting that into the system. And also I was doing my master's at the same time. And the librarian at the time, Karen Genet, who was an amazing and inspirational librarian, she would sometimes take the day off to do various things and PD. And so I became the substitute librarian. And that from that moment, I was just absolutely hooked on reading books aloud to children and finding that child and trying to help them find that book that is like a perfect match. So that was the first inkling of when I wanted to become a librarian.
You had never thought about that at all? It had never come across your mind to be a librarian?
No, not really.
Not at all?
No, not really. Yeah, it was that place and that time that that really made me think.
And you had someone really pleasant above you as well.
Right, yeah.
Because that makes all the difference. It's not what you're doing, it's who you're doing it with.
Absolutely.
That sometimes makes all the difference. Does she have children as well?
Oh, she does, yes, yeah. But she's okay. she actually moved on fairly quickly, and she went to Qatar. Because I was doing my master's in TESOL, all and right. then I had to get my teaching degree and stuff. I really had to get a job. And I figured my best chance to do that was teaching ESOL in the school. And so I was eventually able to do that. And the minute that I got hired full time, my husband was transferred to the United States. So we had put all of this you know, time and effort into sending the kids to NIS and then me becoming a teacher and, you know, getting the full-time job, and then, oh, okay, we're going to go and live in Illinois. So that was the next, you know, spanner in the works.
How long were you in Illinois?
Six years.
6 years?
Yeah,
so that was
years.
Your daughter, your oldest daughter's from the fourth grade until about the 10th grade?
No,
she was in high school by then?
So we were at NIS for about 2 years.
Okay.
So the kids started NIS at fourth grade and third grade. And then when they were seventh grade and sixth grade, that's when we were moved.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so it was
so
a few years.
They finished their school. They finished high school in Illinois, right?
In Illinois, yeah.
Wow.
They started at, and get this, this is kind of funny. They went to MacArthur Middle School, named for General MacArthur. And then they went to Hersey High School, John Hersey High School. He wrote a book. Well, it was an article first, but then a book called Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. He came to Japan after World War II to see how they were affected by the atomic weapon. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he visited Hersey High School year after year until he passed away. He's long gone now, but they still, you know, celebrate his life in that school. So we they went to MacArthur Middle School, named for General MacArthur, and then John Hersey High School, named for John Hersey. It seemed like, you know, it was just meant to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Was that your first time in America?
No, we had been to visit my aunt, and we went to see her on Broadway.
But
and
you had never
like
lived
that.
There.
We had never lived there. No.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we certainly hadn't been to Chicago.
Right.
Yeah, I really did enjoy it. It was a mixed blessing. On the one hand, I wasn't able to work because my husband's company had strict rules against me working. So I had put all of this time into becoming a teacher and you know, doing all of that. But then on the other hand, that gave me the time to become a librarian, right? So I enrolled in another another master's degree for teacher librarianship. And so that's how I became a librarian.
Wow.
But before I did that, I became a teacher in Illinois, like a qualified teacher in Illinois to get my qualification. And then when I couldn't work, I thought, well, I can't just not work. I have to have something for me. So I became involved with the Center for Teaching Through Children's Books and Junko Yokota, who has become an amazing mentor of mine. And an amazing person. She's like a unicorn of all librarians. She founded the Center for Teaching Through Children's Books at National Lewis University.
And she's Japanese, who lives in the States.
She's long-term lived in the States.
Right.
I think she's an American citizen now. So mm-hmm. She was married to William Thiel, who of course was also a very famous and well-respected children's literature professor. At University of Chicago, and so the two of them together, their house in Evanston was just a center for all things kid lit related, and I just had an amazing time volunteering for that organization, and that's how.
Because you could not work for sure, that's one thing you couldn't work while you're in the States because of your husband's company.
Right. Yeah.
So you had to volunteer.
Had to volunteer.
So did you work in any libraries then or volunteer in any libraries at that time?
So the Center for Teaching Through Children's Books was a library for a while, and then they had to close that library. But I also had experiences working with my friend Elisa Gall, mm-hmm. who at the time was a librarian at a school, a private school in Chicago. And my other friend, Katie Alexander, who was the librarian at John Hersey High School. So I did my practicum in those schools mm-hmm. around the place. And I was also volunteering in a Japanese English bilingual school. Yeah, kind of an immersion program. So it was like a two-way immersion program.
So when your 6 years were up, were you ready to come back?
I think so. Yeah, I mean.
What about your, now they've graduated by this time.
No, one of them had graduated and gone to university.
And one was a senior.
One was a senior, and she just graduated, and then we came back.
And she came back with you?
Yeah.
And the oldest one did not?
No. Although we all came back for the summer, right? Because it was the summer, so we all came back.
Well, you did that over the 6 years anyway, didn't you? Every summer, wouldn't you come back sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah, right. Yeah. Sometimes summer, sometimes winter. We got paid to come back every year, so that was nice.
Yes.
How I really enrolled in that program was very interesting. So I was visiting Junko one time, and she was showing me her library. She has a library in her backyard, so can you imagine? So we went out into the backyard, and there's a little sign on the door that says library, and we go in, and there's this beautiful little library right in a, it's a renovated garage, I think, but it's two-story, like it's got all of these ladders around, and it's just an amazing place. And I thought, wow, what an incredible opportunity I've been given here. And on her way heading out of the library, she said, would you be interested in being the gopher for the Caldecott Committee? And I was like, sure, I'd be interested in doing that, thinking she doesn't really mean the actual Caldecott Committee. She means like a mock Caldecott, or you know, there's many, many ways that you can celebrate the Caldecott Award. It's an award for illustration in children's books. So picture books usually will win it. Sometimes a graphic novel or you know something else that has illustrations. Brian Selznick won it once for his big the Hugo Cabret book, like half illustrations and half text. Some interesting books have won that award, but it's mainly award for illustration. So when she said, "Would you like to, you know, volunteer for us?" I was thinking she wasn't really talking about the real one, but in fact she was. So that was the beginning.
What did you have to do as a volunteer?
Well, I was really just getting them food, because they get like locked up in a little room that they've got to hash it out to decide
who's going to be the winner.
Who's going to be the winner and who are going to get
who's decide people obviously they picked to be on the board that might have won it before or are
no
book
they're,
writers.
They're librarians.
They're all librarians.
They're all librarians.
Okay.
Yeah. So Junko was the chair of that committee. Altogether there are 15 of the judges, and they just get into a room for 3 days over the weekend and just hash it out. And by the Monday, they've decided. And it's all very clandestine and nobody knows, including me. So I had to stay clear of the door, and like I would have to rush forward with little packages of food and then knock on the door and rush away again. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
You did that once? 1 year?
1 year.
1 year.
Yeah. And then I don't know if it was because of that, but I just became more involved in general with ALA and ALSC and things like that. And I was on the...
What's ALA?
American Library Association.
Okay.
So as part of that, I was also involved in the Notable Children's Recordings Committee, which is an audiobook committee that I mentioned to you yesterday that I was on that jury for 2 years. So
what was that
like? Allowed me to... Oh, it was amazing. Okay. It was so great. I liked it so much. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And all the time I'm, you know, hanging out with my friends from the Center for Teaching Through Children's Books and going to these ALA conferences and going to, you know, all the conferences. I just went to everything that I could. And of course, everything was voluntary and I was probably paying a lot of money to do it. But, you know, never mind. You know, it was just what the price that I paid for such an amazing experience. And I met so many people that affected me in so many different ways.
So
one of the people that I met during that time was Marissa Moss. Familiar with a book called Barbed Wire Baseball? It is about Kenichi Zenimura. He was a, I think, Major League Baseball player.
Okay.
Anyway, he was a baseball player in the United States. He played with Babe Ruth and...
This is way back.
Right.
And he's Japanese.
He was Japanese. So
he must have been the only one. Was he the first one?
I don't know if he was the first one, but he was certainly a very notable one, and he was very short in stature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pictures of him next to Babe Ruth were almost comical.
That was a big man.
He was interned during the war, of course,
Japanese war.
Japanese Americans, yeah. You know, despite being American, they were still...
It did not matter.
It didn't matter. Yeah. And so he was taken to a very harsh climate. He just had an inkling that he wanted to play baseball. That's all he wanted to do, because that was what he knew how to do well. He knew how to organize people well. And so he organized his fellow, you know, internment campmates to build a baseball field. It was like a field of dreams, a literal field of dreams.
Exactly, yes.
And he would go out there and water it and make sure the grass grew, and they're building stands so that people could watch the baseball games. And then he made a team and he trained the team. And then, you know, it's a wonderful
story.
And inspirational book. It's illustrated by Yuko Shimizu, who's a wonderful Japanese illustrator who lives in New York. And I met Marissa Moss at the author of that book. I met her at an ALA conference and just immediately became friends with her, and she invited me to a breakfast and introduced me to a bunch of other people. And she came to my going away party, which had been organized for me by another friend of mine, Catherine Otoshi, who is just a wonderful picture book writer. So when you ask me, what is your favorite book?
I just can't even go there,
you know.
I should say, tell me about some of your favorite books.
Right.
Because you have so many.
Right. And I did love barbed wire baseball, so it was super exciting to meet Marissa Moss, who had written it. Right after we came back from Japan, I went through a really tough time. It was tough to find a job as a librarian, and also, you know, my family situation wasn't the best, and it was just tough for all of us to transition back again. Marissa was so helpful to me at that time, and she reached out to me, and when she came to Japan, I took her to Yokohama International School, and she did an author visit there, which was wonderful. And many years later, or a couple of years later, I met a student who remembered her author visit there. That was just one, class period.
What year was this?
It would have been 2018. And then the boy who remembered her was probably 2021. It was very lovely to be in contact with her. And then when I was working at the International School of Sacred Heart a few years ago, I've had quite a lot of jobs in this city. All I want to do is to be a librarian. And all I want to do is to introduce that child to that book. And if I can introduce that child to that book, I'm good. So it doesn't matter if I'm here, it doesn't matter if I'm there, as long as I'm doing that, as long as I'm doing something that I love, that I'm happy.
That's beautiful. Yeah. How long, you worked at Sacred Heart for 2 years?
Just 1 year, actually. And then after that, I worked at Chiyoda International School, Tokyo.
I'm not familiar with that at all.
It was just a three-year-old school, but then it closed.
After Sacred Heart, you went to Chiyoda.
Chiyoda, yeah.
Okay. But each time as a librarian?
Each time, well, at Sacred Heart, I was a library assistant. And then I was the librarian at Chiyoda International School. Then that school closed. And, you know, it's been a rough pandemic. And I think it's been a rough pandemic for all of us.
For everyone,
yeah. But it's been tough as a librarian just to find my place. But... You have now. Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, well, it's very different. It's very different working here, though.
It is, because this is not like a school.
No, it's not.
Being
it's not
a club
like a school.
And you have kids from all the international schools. Well, basically Nishimachi, SIJ, British School.
Yeah.
You have Sacred Heart. You have them from all the schools. St. Mary's.
Right. And it's tougher to be the librarian who takes that child and pairs them with that book.
Because you have so many.
Because so many children and so many adult members as well, and everyone's coming in and they're only coming in for 5 minutes. Yeah, but something that I've noticed about the other librarians here is that everybody is like really perfect at what they do. So people will come to Alex and they will always ask her. I think Alex is that librarian now, right? They will come to her and like ask her what to read next, and
right.
Every time that she pairs that child with that, yeah, she knows what to do. She's our YA whisperer.
That's right.
Is Alex. Yeah. So I do the story times here every day at 4 o'clock, and sometimes, you know, I have to like twist some arms to be able to find somebody to read a story to. We've had some really lovely and magical story times here as well, so I'm very grateful for it all.
Right.
When I think of all of the people who have helped me along the way, I've been incredibly blessed, really. I was helping out the Caldecott Committee. You remember that story?
Yes.
I named myself the Magic Food Fairy of the Caldecott Committee of 2000.
Did they know that?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, I used to sign all my emails, Sue Connolly, MFF. Yeah. So that was astounding, and I met so many amazing people who are still my good friends today. And it's just led to meeting so many other people. But among those people was Dan Santat, who won the Caldecott that year for a book called Beagle, The Adventures of Beagle, which is a very special book to me. This is Beagle.
Okay, Beagle.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is a dog in this book.
All right.
And the dog in this book looks like my dog, Joe. So he was a schnauzer. He was a little schnauzer.
Okay.
And I felt like this book had been chosen for me, you know, you know, as many books are. I mean, when you read a book and you think that it's been written for you,
it has been.
Yeah. I heard that Dan Santat was going to be in town, so I thought, I have to go and see him.
Now, in town, you mean here in
Japan?
No,
in Chicago.
In Chicago, when you were there.
In Chicago,
okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So he was repping the books, the Mighty Robot books that he did with Dave Pilkey. I went to this thing, and Dan Santat was talking, and it was great, and I was going to get to meet him and have him sign my book that all the other Caldecott judges had also signed. It was a special day for me already, but then I heard Dave Pilkey speak, and Dave Pilkey, when he was, he's the author of Captain Underpants and Dogman.
I've heard that,
So when he was in second grade, he loved to draw, and he loved to goof off in class. He had ADHD and ADG and dyslexia. He had a lot of things that he was struggling with, but he never struggled with drawing or having fun, and he liked to make people laugh. And so he was drawing, you know, Captain Underpants in his second grade class, and his second grade teacher was very mad at him, and she would say, "Don't you draw people in their underpants?" But of course, when she said the word underpants, everyone laughed even harder. And she ripped up his first copies of Captain Underpants. So it's a pretty famous story that you can see on his website. But he told this story, and immediately my first thought was, I have to get him to sign all of the Captain Underpants books for this one student that I had at Nagoya International School, who had been very like him very like him when I taught him at NIS, and he had a big teacher who was a bully. I hate to say it, but he was not a nice person. And I just thought, I really wanted to get Captain Underpants signed for this boy. And so I planned to go and buy the books. I had to buy the books from a bookstore, and then race back to another presentation at a library. And then I lined up and I asked Dave Pilkey's wife, who is Japanese, I asked her in Japanese, would he please sign the books? I thought, you know, maybe this is my chance. I can like appeal to her, you know, you know, if she thinks I speak Japanese. I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was thinking maybe I got a better chance of him doing it if I speak Japanese. And anyway, of course, he's a wonderful person. So he signed all of the books, and it was amazing. And I
sent it to him. How many books was this?
Probably about 10.
Yeah, and he signed all 10?
He just sat there and signed all of them. And it was really, really nice. And of course, Dan Santat also signed books for him. And, you know, it was amazing. And I was able to send him a big package of books. And his mother was very grateful, and he was very grateful. It was lovely.
How old was he at that time?
He would have been maybe 12 or 13. And then when I was working at Chiyoda International School, it was the pandemic. You know, it was going through hard times. He went online and found the school and saw the big sign that said, "The school is closing, closing, closing." And then he really reached out to us and said he wasn't going to visit because of the pandemic, and he has an elderly relative, but he would do something special for us. And he signed 130 copies of this book on the day that it came out.
Dogman. Wow.
And I mean, this one signed to me, but he drew this Dogman in 130 different books for the 130 students of that school when it closed.
Oh my goodness.
This is my graduation cap from when I graduated. This is Beagle. And I got permission from, so that when you wear it, of course, everybody's cap,
you can't see it.
But right. In a photo, you can find me anywhere because the cap is.
You have it like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So what I was going to say about Marissa Moss before is that she writes Amelia's Notebook, was one of her famous series books, but she also writes narrative nonfiction, and like Barbed Wire Baseball, but also this is a small chapter book that has, at the beginning of every chapter there's a small graphic novel page.
Oh, I see.
Because it's a very difficult topic. It's about a woman who, a female physicist, during the war, she was German and Jewish, and during World War II, it was very hard for her. But she discovered the splitting of the atom.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a lot of success with this book. So I am bringing her to Tokyo American Club in May.
In May?
Yeah, so ultimately that's why I agreed to do this podcast.
Okay, good, so we promote this.
Yeah, we can promote this.
Wow. The woman who split the atom.
Yeah, right. She actually has a new book out that she's also going to talk about a code-cracking spy. And yeah, that's coming out pretty soon. In fact, I think that might be today. And so she's a very prolific writer, and she's going to be doing a graphic novel workshop for kids at TAC. And I'm hoping that she'll be able to go to another school or two to do some school visits while she's here.
Yeah, you're trying to line that up as well. That should be nice. So before I end the podcast, there's a question I always like to ask everyone.
Okay.
If you could go back in time and meet the younger Sue and give her advice based upon what you know now, how old would that Sue be, and what advice would you give her?
I think I would only just go back a few years. I think I would go back to the time that I was trying so hard to make everything work, and I think I would just say, hey, don't stress it, girl. It's going to be fine.
Well, on that note, Sue, I want to thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to thank you.
Yeah.
I want to thank all of you for watching or listening to this podcast. And never forget, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.